Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining Dr. Perletta Ramos and Raj Shell in Living Life Powerfully. We help you turn the ordinary into the extraordinary by claiming your power, getting your heart in the game, and learning how to live from the inside out. Let's create more happiness and success in your life.
Hello. Recently, we talked about substance abuse. We had Tamela McRae, a substance abuse counselor, on the show. Ms. McRae is a counselor at one of the toughest jails in America, touted by Sheriff Joel Arpaio in Phoenix, Arizona. And when we talked to Ms. McRae about substance abuse, we focused mostly on substance abuse treatment. And when we talk about addiction, we tend to focus our thoughts on those who are addicted to things like alcohol or cocaine, heroin, some form of drugs, or nicotine. However, addiction comes in many, many forms. I'm convinced we're all addicted to something. And when I say addiction, what do I mean? Well, there's a significant debate in the community, although to some it's been settled, that addiction is actually a disease, and we're not going to talk about whether it is a disease or not, but what we're going to talk about is what it is in its state. And the state of addiction is characterized by having a compulsive engagement in a reward or a stimuli, and people who are addicted may engage in the behavior despite its adverse consequences. So it tends to be progressive, so you may start off with engaging in the activity once or twice, and then it continues. And so instead of it being once or twice, you may increase your behavior. It's chronic. Quite often you relapse, so there's a pattern to it where you may get over it and then come back to it. It becomes the primary thing that you're focusing on. And if it is related to disease, it can become fatal if you continue to do it. It's also can be characterized by having some compulsion. You have a desire to do it all the time. You may lose your sense of control. And it can distort your thinking. Now, I just said, I think we're all addicted to something. And many of those traits that I mentioned in the state of addiction can be applied to anything. Disease, in the biological sense, right? But the biological process can lead to various behaviors. When we think of the biological process itself, we oftentimes think that there has to be a physical or chemical addiction. But it's not true all the time that it's focused specifically on the biology or the physical chemical piece. When it is, though, there's a disorder in the brain and the brain's reward system. But it also can be a condition that occurs when a person is either ingests a substance or engages in an activity that could be pleasurable, and that when they continue to use it, it becomes compulsive. So it can be physical, as I mentioned, or it can be habitual related to an activity. And that's the area where I think many of us fall into. When we're engaged in an activity, so again, it may not be physical, like an addiction to a substance, but it could be an activity that we're consistently doing or we have a way of thinking. And when that happens in our ordinary course of life, it may be related to work or relationships, or it may be related to health. When those things happen, it can be considered addictive, which is why I think conceivably we all are addicted to something. Now, let's consider what are some traits or characteristics that all addictive stimuli have if we're focused on the activity itself and not the biological part of it. Well, it may be two things, reinforcing, or it may be intrinsically rewarding. So when I say reinforcing, what do I mean? I mean that there's an increased likelihood that a person will seek the repeated exposure. but they're going to do it over and over again, the behavior again, the activity. And then the intrinsically rewarding part means that there's something that's perceived as being positive or desirable about it. Now, I said it, I think, two or three times. I'm going to say it again because the purpose of today's show is to talk about the addictions and to consider where you may be addicted, because we all may be addicted to something, patterns of behavior, things that we may do, activities that we may engage in over and over and over, and we may not think that we have an addiction because it's not a substance. It's not nicotine, or it's not drugs, or it's not alcohol. And we think, I'm not an addict. And this is important, not to prove that you are an addict, but to look at ways in which we're not free to live life fully, so that we can then begin the process from a spiritual perspective to free ourselves from all limitations. So any compulsive behavior, we may be one to go shopping when we are agitated or stressed. We may have a compulsive feeling that we need to shop or do something that's going to make us feel good because we don't feel good. We may use social media. We hear it all the time now that they're coming up with these markers, or they've come up with several already, of how you can tell if you or your children are addicted to social media. There's a compulsive desire to pick up a phone, see who's posted or who's commented or who sent this or what you should send. Some people post incessantly online. They have a desire to do it. And looking at the two traits that I mentioned that characterize an addictive or stimuli response, I say it's reinforcing and intrinsically rewarding. So there's an increased likelihood, as I mentioned, that a person is going to do it again. And there's a desire to do it because there's a positive or desirable result. So when you look at social media, for example, it's rewarding to do it, because you get to see people get to see you online. There's a desire to be connected, quote unquote. That's intrinsically rewarding. We feel good about engaging. And some people become addicted. They have their phones in their hands all the time. They want to do it constantly. Sex is another one. And I'm going to talk about an example in a moment related to food, because many of us eat food, and we don't necessarily think of the food we eat as being addictive, but nearly always a reaction to some sort of emotional distress, whether or not there's a physical one. So in talking about addiction, we're looking at what are ways in which we feel compelled to engage in a behavior. We feel as though we're reinforced by doing it over and over, and there's somehow an intrinsic reward. That's how we're talking about addiction for today's show. And many times, we're engaging in the addiction or the behavior because we have an emotional stress that we're not dealing with, and we may or may not have a physical condition associated with it. So if we don't talk about substance abuse, what can we talk about? That's an example that most of us can make. Well, many of us have a relationship with food. I was at the gym recently, and I asked some of the people that were working out, just to inquire with them in preparation for the show, what is your relationship like with food? And I got a variety of different responses. You know, there are food addicts. So I'm not talking about the extreme of people who have, you know, some sort of pathological relationship with food, meaning there's a disease associated with it. They may have other physical manifestations about it. I'm talking about the average person who's eating, whether they would consider themselves to be addicted to food. And I think the general answer is no. Most folks don't think that they have an addiction to food. However, we're a pretty fat nation. In fact, many Americans, I believe, do have some sort of addictive relationship with food. 66% of the people in the United States are obese or overweight. The U.S., for example, is ranked as the 27th fattest country in the world. As a result of that, we have high incidence of various chronic diseases, like diabetes being one, you know, various heart conditions being another, which also then leads into other types of illnesses, which can actually result in people's death. So whether you have a chronic disease or not is not the indicator of whether you have an addiction to food. The question that I'm posing, though, is what is your relationship with it? Do you use it as a reward? Do you have an intrinsic sense of feeling good if you engage in it? Are you reinforced when you do it again and again? And I'd say on the basic level, many of us are. Using myself as an example, I certainly relate to this. I grew up in a household where food was used as a reward. If we did something great, we went out. Actually, we didn't go out to dinner. My mother baked us a cake, or she made us our favorite meal. And subtly, I grew up with this relationship with food that if something special happens, I go out to dinner. That's what I do now as an adult. I go out to dinner. I may take someone else out to dinner. It is a reward, and I get to feel good about it because there are other things associated with going out to dinner besides the meal. It may be, you know, I have the company of other people. If there's a social setting, many people drink wine as a part of the meal, and actually there's food and wine pairings, a part of the dining experience. And so we have built up this entire structure around food that is very much addictive, or can be, because there's this notion that, you know, it's reinforcing. It's very much likely that a person's going to engage in doing it over and over because it feels good to have social occasion and dining and drinking and having fun. And it's intrinsically rewarding. We perceive it positively. So, again, what I said earlier is two traits that are characterized as addictive stimuli are those that it's reinforcing and that it's intrinsically rewarding. And many of us have that type of relationship with food. I once weighed, for example, 217 pounds at my max. I didn't necessarily think I was addicted to food. So when I mentioned that we're a fat nation, I mentioned that because many of us walk around with addictions. I'm using food as an example for this show. But we walk around not thinking that we have an addiction because we're really not thinking about it. I was obese, and I didn't think I had an addiction to food. What I did slowly recognize over time as I did work around it was that I did have a relationship, a stressful relationship. And as I started working on becoming more and more conscious of my stress, I started being able to focus more and more on my relationship with food. When was I eating? Why was I eating? And what was causing me to develop in very unhealthy habits that I was reinforcing over and over again? Raj, we're talking about eating healthy and using food as one of the examples of how we have addictive behavior when we're not really sure that we have addictive behavior, because most people think about addiction in the context of substance abuse. How are you this morning?
I am doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing really well.
Good.
So eating healthy and losing weight sometimes seems really impossible for many people. And we're coming to the holiday season, actually. Thanksgiving is a couple days away, and then Christmas. Many people pick up weight during this time of the year. And then they, you know, set goals at the beginning of the year to lose weight but that they picked up this year, maybe a year, two, or three before then. And so I thought it was really it might be helpful for some who have a habitual relationship with food during the holidays to consider how there may be an addictive nature to food and how you could really open your mind to looking at ways that, if you're engaging in that type of behavior, you could become conscious of it and make different choices during this holiday season.
It's so interesting that you're talking about this, Perletta, because according to an addiction specialist, Dr. Patrick Carnes, he states that two of the most challenging addictions are food and sex. And they work, actually, they're actually even more challenging because your body, your mind, it adheres to these addictions about 20% faster than like to a chemical addiction. Because what happens is food and sex are both, you know, for our survival. So it's something which is very serious. Sometimes it can be beyond our control because it has started at a very young age. And so I'm so glad that we're talking about this right before the holidays, because although you may not be able to fix the problem, you know, just in this one season, at least you might be able to become aware of it, which is huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. And here's the thing that's really important to this, although there are many things, but here's what I want to point out. It is the relationship that we have with food. Like Raj just mentioned, all of us have to eat or, you know, take in nutrition in order to live and operate and to be healthy, right? Many times people who are thin don't think that they have a quote-unquote problem with food because they're thin. So this affects all of us. It's our relationship with food. It doesn't matter if you're skinny or medium build or obese, or morbidly obese, what we're really talking about is what is this relationship? Because if you have a quick metabolism and you're thin, you still may have a relationship that's addictive. And if you find yourself eating foods that are unhealthy, despite knowing that it could cause you harm, which really applies to anyone, regardless of their size, there may be something for you to consider in terms of your own awareness. Because what the reality is, it affects our entire lives. It affects us physically, you know, with our health. It affects us emotionally if we're eating for stress reasons or really the food is filling some other void. It affects us mentally. We may, you know, feel mentally not as acute. It affects our relationships. It affects us spiritually, so and socially, and physically in our daily lives. So it has the capacity to impact us in general. I mentioned a little earlier, Raj, that I was in a conversation with some people at the gym, and I asked them what their relationship was to food in preparation for the show. And a couple of the folks are into bodybuilding. And one of the things that they mentioned that I love, and it's actually one of my own goals, I'm not that level that they are yet, but they said food is fuel for them. And one of the women in particular used to weigh 160 pounds, and she said, I'm so in touch with the food that I eat now compared to where I was, you know, 160 pounds ago, that as soon as I eat something, I feel it in my body. I can see it. I can sense it. I'm in tune with myself. So I only eat things that help me feel healthy, and I only take in things that are nourishing. And I thought, oh, my gosh, what a heightened level of connection to herself. And from
right,
a spiritual
but I do want to mention, Perletta, yeah, that's awesome. And then we can also take that to the other extreme where there's a total preoccupation with that. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's about bringing it into balance, because I have seen people who are so into, like, you know, the raw food and the veganism, and that's what they identify with. And it is such a preoccupation. So, and that's one of the things that we can ask ourselves is, okay, number one, is it a preoccupation? Okay, is it harming others? Maybe you're doing this and harming others along the way, in the sense that maybe you offend people, maybe you make them feel really bad about themselves, or, you know, however we can harm people in so many ways. Maybe there's shame around it. Maybe when you're not able to eat that way, or The other sign, symptom, is that maybe you feel sad at times. And maybe you've tried to seek help for it, and maybe you've been unsuccessful. But I think all of these things are really important. So it's not really whether, you know, because we can, it's about bringing balance, because we can eat a little bit of this and that and a little bit of, you know, healthy too. So I think it's this preoccupation that is so interesting to me in addiction. It's the consequence.
Absolutely, Raj, and I certainly not just agree with you, but it that can be an addictive behavior, what you're talking about. So the question I pose: what is your relationship with food? Whether you're addicted to eating healthily, which means you have to rigidly do, you know, whatever it is that you're engaging in, it's something for you to consider. So what I want to transition into talking about is, you know, having a spiritual connection to your relationship with food or whatever the addiction, quote unquote, may be in your life. It's like more of an inquiry for people to look at where I may have addictions that I'm not aware of addictions. And we're using food as an example. So any way in which you feel like, you know, there's a chronic, you know, behavior that you must engage in, that you feel compulsive to do, and, you know, you feel like a lack of control, which would indicate that you're out of balance, that's an opportunity for you to look at it as, you know, maybe this isn't just something I'm doing. Maybe there's something deeper that I'm feeling compelled to do it, and it's an opportunity for you to look at it to become more self-aware. So in this idea of how can I look at this more from a spiritual perspective, you know, whatever your relationship is to the thing that you may do that you feel really good about but you feel like you have to do, I'm speaking with a colleague the other day, and she was saying her daughter has some compulsive behavior. She's OCD. Like, we throw around that term in our society, don't we? Oh, the person's OCD, you know. That's a type of compulsive behavior, right? And it's not good or bad. It's just we all have some forms of this. And there's an opportunity to look at where does it inhibit us from living our lives fully. And several substance abuse treatment programs use like the 12 steps, right, to incorporate spiritual components in their treatment, and they rely on a higher power to help their members recognize that there may be an inability to deal with problems alone, and they rely on God for help. And in that same context, I want to talk about, as you mentioned, Raj, having balance. How can I incorporate my own spiritual beliefs into my life in a way that if I'm engaging in a behavior, you know, whether it be feeling compelled to pick up my iPhone and or my, you know, Samsung or whatever kind of phone you have, to check my email constantly or my social media constantly, or as Raj mentioned, maybe I feel the need to have sex consistently. Well, maybe I'm not an alcoholic, quote unquote, but I have a need to have 2 drinks every day, you know, or I need to go shopping to feel good. Whatever the item is, it's an opportunity for you to look at that and wonder, just ask yourself, do I feel compelled to do this? Is there some compulsive action to it? Or do I feel free? Am I in balance with it? Or you may just ask yourself, if I did without this thing that I do every day or constantly, you know, how would I feel about it? And if you feel some resistance to letting it go, it's an opportunity for you to look at it deeper and say, maybe I'm in a relationship with it, that I'm using that as a means to deal with stress in some other way. Because what spirituality can do, and when I say spirituality, what I'm talking about is that there's a power that's in the universe that's beyond ourselves, that we're interconnected with it, right, with all things. And in this desire for a deeper understanding and peace and self-awareness and having meaning and purpose in life, we can go deeper beyond any material thing that's on this earth that we're connecting to that helps to bring us peace. We can actually transcend the desire for, you know, fill in the blank, sex, alcohol, drugs, with filling that interconnectedness with the divine being.
And so, I just want to add here too, like in my office, I get people who have tried the 12 steps and it hasn't worked for them because they don't believe. Maybe they're agnostic or maybe they're atheist and they don't believe in that perspective. And so one of the questions that I ask them is, do you believe in your own higher power? Do you believe that you can be, you know, more, or you can be better than you are today? And they always say yes, because otherwise, number one, they wouldn't have walked into my office. So I think it can just start, even if you are not able to view it as something that, you know, if you don't believe in that, all that higher force or, and what you're talking about, Perletta, that interconnectedness, it doesn't mean that you're out of luck. It just means that, you know, do you believe in your higher power? And that's a very powerful place to go for someone.
I love the distinction that you're making, because you're right, Raj. I just finished reading a book that by a man named Coates, and it the title of it is Between the World and Me. And he's an atheist. And in reading the book, I almost couldn't tell until he mentioned it maybe halfway or three-quarters of the way in, because he was so focused on the existential aspects of living and who are we and who am I and who are we as a world and why do we engage in behavior that's self-destructive and self-defeating. And he wasn't in a conversation about God, because he doesn't believe in God, but he was in a conversation about humanity and connecting to my own personal greatest good and purpose. And what if each person did that, would the world be in the state that it's in today? And so this question that you're raising, it's not about whether you believe in God. Spirituality, it can be a part of that, if that's your belief, but it also helps to connect us to our purpose and meaning, and how can we live a more fulfilled existence on this earth. So when there's an acceptance of our spirituality, I believe it helps us to connect more deeply with ourselves. And if we believe in God, it allows us to connect more deeply with God. And ultimately, it allows us just to connect and be more peaceful in everything that we do. And that's the main purpose of the conversation of whether we have an addiction or not, to just be in the inquiry. Because when we feel compelled to do things, and we may not even be aware of it, and it can lead to self-destructive behavior, and that self-destructive behavior just may be a lack of peacefulness without that thing, if we connect more deeply to ourselves, then we can transcend that. A, we can become aware of it, and then we can heal it so that we can move beyond it. So we have just actually a couple minutes. I wanted to have a little more conversation about this. This is one of those, Raj, where like the time flies because there's so much to say.
oh, yeah. We could talk about this all day, I think, this topic.
You know, it's so important, I think, if we can connect to who we really are and face the dark parts of ourselves and we invest energy into just seeing who we are at a deeper level, we have an opportunity to shine light onto our shadow selves, you know, the places that we typically don't see it or we don't think about. And when we're able to do that, when we shine the light, then we're able to transcend them and live more powerfully, which is and become more self-accepting and self-loving. William James.
Dr. Patrick Carn says, just make sure that you understand the distinction between your focus versus your obsessions and your challenges versus being stressed out about something. You know, just remember the distinction and you should be on the straight path.
Right. Well, at one point I remember thinking, wow, if I got to say you can be addicted to anything, and then I realized, well, you actually can be addicted to anything. So,
yeah.
The quote was really appropriate. Thank you for that, Raj. I want to close with my own quote, actually, by William James. And he said, the greatest revolution of our generation is the discovery that human beings, by changing the inner attitudes of their minds, can change the outer aspects of our lives, or their lives. I think that, and that says it all. Join us next week when we'll discuss desire, Raj is going to lead us in a conversation about how you can recognize and become aware of your own desire. That sounds juicy and delicious, Raj. And she's going to make a transformative experience for you. Have a fantastic and amazing week, day, and life. So long.
Have a beautiful week.